The leaves haven't turned yet, but the light is weak at the afternoon's end, and there's a smell of wood smoke occasionally in the evening. Most tellingly, amongst all of us in these parts, there's a deep instinctive craving for casseroles. Yes, surely it's fall. It's also the diner for Friday, September 15th, 2006. Welcome. You know, I actually feel like a casserole. No, I mean, not literally. I have bones. There are no bones in casseroles. It's been boned. Or deboned, if you prefer. No, I feel as though I would like a casserole, which is rare, frankly. I had enough of them when I was growing up. One of those words that looks like it should be Italian, doesn't it? Casserole, from the Italian, meaning house of wet ocelot fillets. I don't know. But when you say casserole, nobody really asks for elaboration. Nobody ever says, well, what kind of casserole is that? Casserole is what it is. It is the thing that is the casserole. It defines itself. You need no adjectives. It is a substance that is smooth, but with varying degrees of resistance to the tooth. It may be embedded with certain parts and portions of meat. And regrettably, depending on who's cooking it, it may contain celery. I hate celery. Celery is useless. Celery serves no function. Celery is the hanging on parasite of the vegetable world. But it's worse when it's in a casserole, because a casserole is smooth. And what does the celery do? It adds crunch. I don't know how they do it. You can take little pieces of celery and put them into a casserole and bake the thing for 17 hours. And at the end of it, the celery will still be crisp. That's the problem. There ought not to be something crisp in a dish known for its smoothness. I know, you may say, perhaps, that the crispness of the celery adds a piquant contrapositive note which only underscores and reinforces the smoothness of the casserole. Ha! You could say that if you want. Just don't say it around me, okay? Because I have strong opinions on the matter. I don't mean to get so doctrinaire early on in the diner here, but celery in casseroles just doesn't do it for me. And it's not a matter of taste. It's not a matter of opinion. I think I'm right. I could probably prove it, empirically, if I had time and money. If I were George Soros, I would devote a year of my life to going around the globe and giving people two samples of casseroles, one with celery, one without, and then I would take notes. At the end of the year, I would present my findings to the International Celery Adjudication Board or something like that. They'd be shocked. They'd be stunned. They'd disband on the spot. Well, anyway, oh, hi, folks. Welcome to the diner. I'm James Lilac, sitting here at my accustomed place at the long boomerang-patterned Formica counter here at the diner out on Old Highway 23. Not the new one, not the bypass, Old Highway 23. And we're about, give or take, 18 and a half, exactly, minutes from wherever you happen to be right now. And if you are hungry, come here, because I'm predicting that casserole is about. It's the mood, it's the season. Let me crane my neck here and look at the chalkboard by the door. They seem to have positioned it so I can't see it quite right. And it says, see menu for specials. Since when? The specials have always been on the chalkboard. This makes no sense. The chalkboard has always been there. The chalkboard has been there since they invented chalk. What is this? What are chalkboards made of exactly? Is it slate? It's some sort of strange material. You just wonder if they had a lot of it laying around before they invented chalk, or whether they stumbled upon some great vast chalk deposit but knew not what to do with it because they hadn't found the proper amount of slate. Oh, man! The day they put those two together, there must have been high fives all around. Hope somebody patented that. Be nice if somebody did. Be nice if they found somewhere in a Greek cave ancient patents for all the things that we just take for granted today. And I wonder if they'd still be legally binding. Somebody could take that to the UN or the International Celery Adjudication Council. Anyway, this makes no sense. That's where you put the specials. You walk into the restaurant, you see the special on the board, and you think to yourself either A, well, that's for me. End of discussion. No need to even look at a menu. Or B, you think, no. No, but that's interesting. And then you take your seat, you start to order. I'm generally a brisk ordering kind of fellow anyway. I don't spend a lot of time with menus. I don't like to. The more time you spend with a menu, the more you become confused. The more you doubt your choices. The more you look at your meal with trepidation when it arrives, and always you're wondering, what if I'd had the X? Eh? So, no. I look at the menu, I scan it for what I want. I want meat. Do I want it rectangular or circular? Rectangular. And then you close the menu and you go on with your life. Even if I'm in an Asian restaurant, and it's one of those interminable menus that has 147 items, I can usually find out what I want fairly quickly because I look for keywords like chicken, and then I eliminate keywords like prawns or water chestnuts. God, I hate water chestnuts. They're the albino version of celery. They're like, oh, they're like cryogenically frozen beetles. They crunch. They crunch. They ought not to crunch anyway. So I don't spend a lot of time with menus, but of course I know where the menus are here at the diner, even though I don't think I've looked at one in 10 years. And I'm sure you know where the menus are too. The diner configuration is universal, fairly common and easy. There's not all diners, of course, have the jukeboxes at the counter as we do here. But straight ahead of me is the napkin holder, and the napkins come out one at a time. They're brilliantly folded. Interfolded, you might say, so that one is ready to come out just as you take the other one. It's just magic. You could sit there and empty that thing all day. And then to the right and to the left, there are the condiments. There are bottles of ketchup and mustard. It's Squeeze Please brand mustard, if you wish. And yes, the bottle has a picture of a waitress holding a tray on which there is a bottle of Squeeze Please mustard. And if you look closely at it, you can see the tiny, tiny little waitress inside that bottle. Presumably, she too holds a tray in which there is embedded a microscopic version. And as I've said before often, so I don't know why I'm saying it again, this is sort of one of those moments as a child where you realize, wow, I wonder if there are infinite universes going back that way. And whoa, what if there are infinite universes going the other way? What if I'm in the world that's in somebody else's other Squeeze Please bottle and they're like giants or something? And then that freaks you out and you don't sleep for a week, so you think about it not. And then there's the mustard version of the Squeeze Please lady, which is a weird sort of photographic negative. The ketchup Squeeze Please is red with yellow ink, and the mustard, of course, is yellow with red ink. It's the yin, the yang. They complement each other wonderfully. Then on the other side of the napkin dispenser, you have that other old couple, salt and pepper. God, love them. Been together for years. But tucked behind that are the menus. They're in this little sleeve. Two little brackets hold them up. And so you, the customer, just reach around and pick them up. But you can always tell a regular, because a regular will sit down here at the counter or sit down in the booths and get out the menu. People who've never been here before sit there and wait for the waitress to wander over, smile in a strained fashion, put down a glass of water, which has that little... It bulges out a little bit towards the top, and it's filled with ice that melts quickly, and the water isn't quite cold, but it'll do. And then she gives you the menus, as if you couldn't have gotten them yourself. Well, this is fascinating, I'm sure, but let me get the menu and see what the special is. And you know what the menus look like, don't you? They're small, they're larger than a paperback book, they're quite thin, they have metal tips in the corners. Sort of a fake plastic leather, pleatherette. It's not even real pleather, it's pleatherette, I think. And then you open it up inside, and there are two mimeographed sheets under plastic, thick plastic. And the top of the plastic near the center is starting to come away a little. And then on the right side here, which I'm looking at, there is a little plastic clip in which the specials are often inserted, as they are today. And I'm looking at it right now, stunned. I haven't seen this before. And it's interesting, that little space there, that little white plastic clip into which they insert the specials, for many years was used, and presumably still is, as advertising space. It's about an inch and a half long, and perhaps a half an inch tall. There's not a lot you can pack into there. But every time I would see one, it would be advertising Heinz 57 ketchup. And that's fine, I suppose, but you're at a diner. You're probably going to have a hamburger or a grilled cheese sandwich. The idea that you could add ketchup to this doesn't exactly come as some revelatory thunderbolt. Huh? My God, ketchup! Of course! I suppose it's brand identification to make people want Heinz 57, demand Heinz 57, walk out if you don't get Heinz 57. But well, you know, what do people know, for heaven's sakes? I mean, we have the squeeze please bottles here. We could be filling that with any kind of stuff. Could be Heinz, could be Hunt's, could be RC Cola brand ketchup. Nobody knows. I trust it's Heinz. It's above board operation here. Extra fancy Heinz, but nothing less. But people don't know. It could be possible that they're actually, they put Heinz bottles out, but they fill them with substandard brands. Now, when I was a waiter, one of the things we used to do at the end of the shift was to marry the ketchup bottles. That's restaurant lingo for you there, and it involves taking the bottle that has less and putting it into the bottle that has more. And then we'd have these little sleeves, and you'd put them together. You'd dock them like Apollo and Soyuz. And it was a sign of a good waiter that he could take two bottles which seemed to contain equal amounts of condiment and figure out which should go into which. Which should pitch and which should catch, so to speak. So, anyway, yeah. Heinz 57. Well, here's the little mimeographed sheet. And the specials today are... is... hot dish. That's even better than casserole. Do you want to know why? I refer you to the jukebox, F12.
That meat is good meat. That meat is good meat. Don't take a back seat. Don't take no lean meat. Just try some fat meat. It's good, good, good. I'm telling you, bud, don't be an old dud. If you're a hep cat, you like your meat bad. You ought to know that it's good, good, good. Destruction is driving me mad. Got a feeling that I've never had. For every morning I wake up and say, what are we having for dinner today? I get an answer, and what does she say? Fat beans, chopped beans, stewed beans, rib beans. But I'd rather have fat meat. Fat meat is good meat. Fat meat is good meat. Don't take no back meat. Don't take no lean meat. Just try some fat meat. It's good, good, good.
That's right, fat meat is good meat. And that's what I remember as being the key ingredient in mom's hot dishes. Fat meat. Hamburger. And not this 99% lean stuff you find today that tastes like Play-Doh. No. We're talking 64% lean. You know, that was a promise. And she would mix it with rice and then add some soup. And then it would just bake up and bubble and marinate for an hour or so. And at the end of it, you'd have hot dish. And when somebody in our part of the Scandinavian world said, we're having hot dish, you knew what that meant. Hamburger and rice with that extra special mysterious ingredient that we never quite could figure out. Rumor had it was cream of mushroom soup, but cream of mushroom soup. Look, let's not get crazy and exotic here. Well, I've talked long, haven't I, about small things. How to back out gracefully. I know, of course. Whew. And now, a word from our sponsors.
waste kitchen fats. Certainly nothing to us, but they're a vital ingredient in the manufacture of high explosives. That's the stuff that's rocking our enemies right now, fore and aft. The OPA has now authorized your butcher to pay you 2 brown points for every pound of fat you save. 2 brown points and 4 cents in cash. That's certainly pretty good pay for helping to win the war. So keep rendering the fat, pouring it into smooth-edged cans, and bringing it to your butcher. You collect 1 brown point for every half to 3/4 of a pound, 2 brown points for 3/4 of a pound to 1.5 pounds, and so on. These points will be good for any meat or fat purchases, so get your fat in. It's vitally important. To waste fat is unforgivable. To waste anything is setting a horrible example.
Friends, you'll remember some months ago we read you our first report, the 6 months report on the effects of smoking. Then more recently, we read you the 8 months report. Now, here is the latest one. The full 10 months report confirms again.
The group examined showed no adverse effects on the nose, throat, and sinuses from smoking Chesterfields.
This from a medical specialist who is making regular bi-monthly examinations of a group of people from various walks of life. 45% of them have smoked Chesterfield for an average of over 10 years.
After 10 full months, the specialist reports he observed no adverse effects on the nose, throat, and sinuses of the group from smoking Chesterfield.
That's the report. Buy much milder Chesterfield, regular or king size. The cigarette that's best for you.
Oh, it gets better. Waitress took my order for the hot dish and told me that it comes with a side of bread. White bread. White bread with butter. Although I fear it's going to be those little wax paper slabs of cold, cold butter. You know, the kind that you can never put it on white bread without just ripping the hell out of the bread. Then you end up wadding it all up into this bolus of butter and enriched flour. But still, for mopping up the hot dish, can't beat it. Mailman came and dropped off some mail for me. A letter. So let's open it up here and see what it says. You know, if I'm going to read letters at the diner, I should really have some letter reading music, shouldn't I? Let's see if there's anything in the jukebox here. All right. Dear Mr. Lilix, actually it's pronounced Lilix, but I'm just going to assume that the person thinks it's Lilix. Everybody does. It ought to be. And you look at it, that vowel between those two towering L's looks like it should be a short vowel, but it's not. But what are you going to do? Dear Mr. Lilix, I was just wondering if you had heard from Jimmy Leakes. I enjoyed his fresh take on things and look forward to him coming back. Well, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know any Jimmy Leakes. I think this may be a joke, actually, as to the way that my name is pronounced in restaurants. And I've mentioned that before. When I was a kid and we'd go to eat out in a restaurant, either at Perkins or the Embers, you would put your name with a hostess and then wait to be called, and invariably, the waitress would mangle the name. Lilix was the most common. Leakus was another good one. I always enjoyed that. Party for three. Leakus. But the one that always stunned me, that I get to this day, is Leakes. As though that second L just doesn't exist. People just slide right back past past, they think they're seeing double or something, so... Oh no, it can't be L-I-L-E-K-S, it's gotta be L-I-E-K-S, leaks! You try, as a tender adolescent, to walk across a restaurant after you've just been announced as Mr. Leaks. These mispronunciation episodes happened frequently, too, because we went out to eat every Sunday after church. Usually went to one of two places, either Perkins, known for its exceptional pancakes and its unique syrups, such as Twinberry, made from the finest Twinberries, or the Embers. I'm not sure why we went to the Embers, because they weren't very good at breakfasts. I recall the French toasts. They were dry, leathery. They appeared to have been deep-fried, but they were dusted with powdered sugar, which, when you're 9 years old, makes all the difference in the world. Embers was mostly known for its hamburgers and its secret sauce. But you didn't have a hamburger after church. That seemed wrong, somehow. Somehow the reintroduction of carnality so soon after absolution was not appropriate. And we were Lutherans. We didn't even get absolved, but, you know, still, you had your breakfast. Sometimes, however, we would eschew the Perkins and the Embers for fine dining. For a family occasion. Special day. There weren't an awful lot of fancy dining options in Fargo. One of the most favorite places, actually, was called The Bowler. And if you're thinking of a bowler hat, think more of a restaurant attached to a bowling alley, because that's what it was. Later came the chains, of course, the Cork and Cleaver, the Flask and Fork, whatever. But we had The Bowler, and we had the Oak Manor. The Oak Manor was located in the Oak Manor Hotel. Actually, Oak Manor Motel, if you want to be accurate. And when I entered there first as a child, I had that sick feeling in the pit of my stomach that every kid knows when they confront the dreaded heavy menu. If it's a heavy menu, there's nothing on it you want. You scan it, desperately looking for something you can eat, and all you see are burgundy stuffed scallops or country possums stuffed with sweet potatoes. And if there's a tassel in the heavy menu, the chances of you getting a burger or a plate of spaghetti out of these people is nil. Now, you see that tassel, you feel the heft of the menu. Ugh, you know this is going to be grim. Anyway, so I'm sorry, Mr. Jackson. I do not know the whereabouts of this Mr. Leaks of whom you speak. Unless, of course, you're referring to me, and you are some ancient nemesis who called my name in a restaurant 20 years ago, in which case, thanks, I've gotten over it. Mostly. Now let's hit the jukebox, shall we? What do we have? What's new this week? Oh, this is interesting. Something from Mask Man. Mask Man and the Ancients. What do you know? That was actually a group out of Washington, D.C., I believe, and the lead singer wore a mask on stage. Why? No particular reason. He just did. And he'd been kicking around the business since 1947 and finally had a hit in 1969.
My, yo. You know my wife, she's a nurse, yo. She go to work every night at 9:45. She say, Mass, I don't want you hanging over the Bill's apartment. You better be home when I come in. Then my dog sat down and grit his teeth. And then my cat lay down by the door. He said, now if you don't dig what soul mother said, you ain't gonna be sleeping around here no more.
Well, what are you doing shaking right
now? I'm scared of my wife, my dog, and my cat.
What are you doing shaking right
now? I told you I was scared of my wife, my dog, and my cat. I'm too good to them three for them to treat me like that.
Well, what are you gonna do about it then?
I'm gonna put on my glad rag and my $50 shoe, my crazy hat. I know they like you like that. And then I split out in the hall. I heard old Bill call. He said, come on over, Mass. They be really having a ball. Got a thing to lose, we got a table full of booze and all kind of food. Then I slid on down the hall with a smile on my face. There was pretty girls sitting all over the place.
Where they fat?
Fat as a country possum stuffed with sweet potatoes.
I want to know where they fat.
I told you they was fat as a country possum stuffed with sweet potatoes, with the mini skirts on and the crazy sweaters. It took me 2 hours to get myself together.
You know your wife done told you about them young girls, old big-eyed roper.
Well, my wife don't know, son, things like that will never hurt.
I want a sandwich.
Oh, what you want on it?
I'll take a couple of those pig feet over there, two or three of those hot rolls, some of them greens with that fat back in it, and some of that potato salad, and I'll try some of them chili dogs if you don't mind. Lord, having a good time. Good God. Yeah. Having a party. Having a party, y'all.
What are they doing in there now?
Man, they're doing a dance. They call it squeeze your knees. That's what they're doing. Old Bill fell out on the floor. You know what he said? He said, lighten up on me, baby, please. That's what he said. Then one looked in the corner, said, Mass, what's wrong with you? It's a brand new dance. You can do it too. Then I got up in the floor and got into my act. My old lady back through the door. Then she touched me in the back. She had my German police dog with her, the one I raised from a pup. She sicked that monster on me, man, that was just too much. He tore off my crazy suit and I run from under my hat. And when I split him apartment door, I got flown by my cat.
You better watch out for your wife, your dog and your cat.
What they doing? What they trying to do? What they do? Tell them to leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Masked man and the agents. Tonight I'm scared of my wife, my dog, and my cat. Unfortunately, their follow-up hit, I Am Vaguely Unnerved by My Hamster and Parakeet, failed to chart. Well, I have my hot dish, and I'm looking at it. And I wish I had Superman-like X-ray vision that could detect the presence of celery lurking beneath the surface. Don't see any on top, but celery's crafty in that way. Won't show itself all the time. It could be down there waiting. Well, I'll have to eat it gingerly then, won't I? Sort of like eating fish. Or rather like eating fish used to be. I can't remember the last time I encountered a bone eating fish. When I was a kid, I always used to hate any sort of fish other than fish sticks, because when you ate it, you felt like you were trying to diffuse an explosive device with your mouth somehow, that at any moment this mouthful of blandness could erupt into bones. And you get a bone in your gum, or worse yet, a bone in your throat. Oy, a fish bone in your throat. Nothing was worse. Never happened to any of us, never happened to any of our friends, but we'd read about it, we'd heard about it, it was entirely possible. And so when Mom said, fish is for dinner, you look at her, oh, great, why don't you just take a hat pin and stab me in the throat, Mom? Anyway, you know, I never thought about this before, but it's possible that celery is actually intrinsic to the recipe and you can't take it out. Perhaps it is some sort of molecular binding agent at the quantum level. And it has to be there, or the whole hot dish flies apart into constituent elements. I don't know. It could be as necessary to the hot dish as onions to a White Castle slider. Can't take those off, oh no. I tried. First time I went to White Castle, didn't like onions in my burgers at that time in my life. Later I would come to know better, but then, what did I know? Callow youth. And I said, six hamburgers, no onions, please. And the clerk looked at me with wide-eyed confusion, then no small amount of fear. She said, but that's the way we make them, she said. And I'm looking at the grill, and there they are. The onions are on top of the hamburgers. Take that big metal thing and scrape them off. They wouldn't do it. Something happens if they do. Well, if all this theorizing of mine holds together, then there's going to be celery in this. And there's nothing I can do about it. I could poke through it until I hit celery. But just the sight of the stuff, green in the wonderful meaty brownness, turns my stomach. I could ask, put celery in this? But then they might look at me as some strange outsider to these parts. Of course it has celery in it. What am I thinking? I know. I could take it out in the parking lot, shoot it with a gun, and see if any small parts of celery are thrown clear. That way it wouldn't disgust me so much if I saw the green parts separate from the wonderful meaty brownness. That's a lot of work. Well, I better get started then.
Excuse me, waitress, I'm just going to take this hot dish outside and shoot it. You want to be sure? Okay, save my seat. I'll be back.
Okay, this looks like a good spot. It's downwind from the playground. Let's step back here a bit. And aim. Now let's do a BDA of the perimeter for celery. Ah-ha! The area is lousy with celery. Stuff's all over the place. I knew it. See, that's why it's always important sometimes if you have your suspicions, take the meal out into the parking lot and shoot it. It's the only way to be sure. All right. Still kind of hungry, though. Wonder if they have any country possums stuffed with sweet potatoes. Does sound kind of good. Yeah, maybe I'll just have a hamburger with onions. Gotta have the onions. I love the way they add that crunch to the meal, don't you? They're just indispensable. Well, that's it for this week, folks. Thanks for dropping by. I'm James Lilacs, and this has been The Diner for Friday, September 15th, 2006. We'll see you down the road.